Hey, what's up, everyone? I'm Joey Dotz. This is the Dot Daddy Podcast. Today is June 14th, 2024, and we are here with Katie from Katie SMP up in Canada. What's up, Katie?
Yeah, what's up?
Is it getting warm up there?
Yeah. It's a beautiful summer day. Summer Friday is happening right now. Yeah.
So did you grow up in Canada? Is that where you're from?
Yeah, I grew up about 45 minutes outside of Toronto in a town called Burlington, Ontario.
Burlington, Ontario. I've never been to Canada. I want to go. It looks really nice. I definitely would like to go there more in the summer, right?
Where are you? I'm
in Delaware. Delaware. Okay. So the closest airport is Philadelphia. So I'm about 40 minutes from Philly.
Okay. So our winters are the exact same as yours.
Really? Okay.
Yeah, everyone has this notion about Canada. It's like we live in igloos in the winter and we ice fish and I mean, there's people that do that, of course, but no, we're very, very much the same as that part of America for sure.
Now, do you come here often? Do you come to the US often or no?
Yeah. I mean, it's so close, obviously you can kind of hop on a flight and get anywhere, but both for personal stuff and training. We do a lot of work in the States, which is cool. So.
Nice. And so what was it like growing up in Canada?
I will say I am the typical Canadian. I played hockey for most of my childhood.
Oh, shit.
Yeah. Okay. And I went to school. I was on a scholarship. I went to a school in Rochester, New York for a little bit. So yeah, I was kind of the quintessential Canadian childhood, I guess I should say.
Is that female hockey or is it? Yeah.
All good. I played with boys. I think I actually just got asked this question recently, which is funny. I played with boys, I think up until I was about maybe 7 or 8, and then I switched over to girls. There's just so many girls that play, so it's a big deal here.
I didn't realize that. So there's full leagues with just girls doing ice hockey up in Canada.
Yeah, especially now there's like a full on professional league. It's kind of like the movement that the WNBA is having.
Okay, they got to find the new Caitlin Clark then, right? That's going to bring all the fans.
Exactly. Yeah, I think it's happening, honestly.
Oh, that's very cool. Very cool. So you would check people and everything? You were like, boom.
Yeah.
Good for you. Do you have older brothers that kind of toughened you up?
Yeah, I have one older brother. Yeah.
Okay. How long have you been doing scalp micropigmentation?
So I took my first course in 2018, I believe it was. That was kind of just a fundamentals course, like kind of where everyone starts. And I did quite a bit of training after that, but that was my first kind of experience to the whole SMP world.
The reason why I asked that is, so you were there during COVID. I'm assuming you were doing SMP during COVID. And I know the restrictions were a little different in Canada. What was that like?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Seems like so long ago. I feel like I've kind of blocked that out of my memory. But I will say the COVID times, or the time when COVID was happening, was very kind of pivotal for my SMP career. So I did, my first training was with Masood and Jeff with Leaders Academy, which is funny because now I'm training with them. But so that was the first training was in LA, and Masood and I believe we're the only Canadian. He was a trainer, of course. I was a student, but we were the only Canadians in the room when the training was happening. So I remember at the time I was kind of like, oh, okay. I didn't realize, you know, there would be someone. He's from Montreal, which is kind of about a 6-hour drive from me. But anyway, so from that point on, from when the training was over, we kind of kept in touch in terms of like a mentorship. And then for kind of a couple years following my first training, I remember when COVID happened, we were completely shut down here. But for whatever reason, because we have in Canada, I'm not sure if you're familiar, but we have provinces, which is kind of the same thing as states, obviously. So we're in Ontario, but Montreal is in Quebec. So the Quebec rules were a lot more chill and lax than the Ontario ones for whatever reason. So they were allowed to remain open during, I think they closed for a very short period of time, and then they opened up quite a bit sooner than Ontario did. And so I remember at that time, I was still doing a lot of trainings with Masood. I was driving back and forth kind of like every other weekend to do master classes and stuff with him. And then at that point, he was like, okay, this girl's serious. Like, we could, you know, we could partner up here. And he wanted to open another location, right? So, so I ended up, we signed a contract. We went into business together at that time. I believe it was 2020. So right in kind of the thick of COVID times. And then I ended up moving to Montreal for a few month period because I was obviously 100% closed here. So I worked out of his clinic and really just really kind of delved deep into the art of SMP and really got to know, you know, different skin tones and ethnicities and application styles and all of that. And that's really where my career kind of took off was because I was very fortunate enough to spend a lot of time in Montreal at that time.
And with one of the best artists, in my opinion, in the world.
Yeah, the best. I mean,
Masood, he's a literally. Fucking beast.
Yeah, oh yeah.
Not Masood. I mean, he's a beast. Yeah. I met him at the SMP Expo in was it Phoenix? Phoenix, Arizona, you know, 2021. Did you go to that?
I was gonna say, I wonder if we crossed paths at that point then, because I was there.
I was there wearing a tracksuit, looking ridiculous.
I was like, anyone that I met at that was my first kind of exposure to anything like that. I've never worked like a corporate, never done, you know, any sort of conference or anything like that. I was like the most shy person in the room. Yeah. So if we met, you probably didn't remember.
Did you, so what did you do? Did you say you went to college and played hockey in college, or was that high school in Rochester?
College, yeah.
Okay. In Rochester, what did you go to college for?
I have a business degree.
Same.
It
helps. It helps, in my opinion.
Yeah. I think, I mean, my whole family, that's kind of what the background was just kind of, you know, the business side of things as opposed to sciences or anything else, law or anything, you know, anything like that. So yeah, it kind of morphed into it, something that it helps for sure.
Yeah. Were you a good kid, Katie, or were you bad?
You know what? My parents joke there. I was like the biggest brat of all brats. Definitely. Yeah. I'm a much different adult, I think. So I'm told anyways.
You matured a little bit?
I think so. Yeah.
And, so you go to college, you get a business degree. Do you end up doing any type of work in business, banking, or anything like that?
No. So I actually, the first kind of cosmetic service that I picked up and kind of ran with was eyelash extensions. That was my kind of entry to the beauty cosmetics world. And I was actually skipping class and skipping exams and all that to take lash clients in my student house. That was Don't. I'm sure my parents will maybe check this podcast out, but yeah, they surprised. That's what I was doing.
You were making money, right?
Yeah, I was hustling. Yeah, I was not a student. Not. I could never go back to school now, but we made it through, and that's all that matters.
Yeah. So you started doing eyelash extensions while you were still in college. And then, so out of college, did you just continue to do the eyelash extensions, or were you like, I'm going to learn microblading or lip blush, or what did you do?
Pretty much for 5 or 6 years after that, that was my full-time thing. I think I rented a couple studios, and I ended up back at home, obviously during COVID, of course, that kind of forced everyone home. So I made the transition directly from lashes to SMP. There was no real, I remember I dabbled with the idea of doing microblading, but, I don't know. I never really gravitated to it the same way that I did with SMP.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I same way, but obviously you have a lot more hair, right? So, you know, a lot of guys like me, a bald guy, you get it done. I was like, okay, I'm going to learn scalp micropigmentation. You know, I was working at a bank and I was like, I'm going to go learn S&P. This is awesome. No one's doing it here in Delaware. So how did you even learn about it? I mean, because to me, it doesn't look like you have any hair loss. Were you just researching different, I guess, cosmetics?
Yeah. You know what? I was actually introduced. It was a long-term lash client of mine, a good friend of mine at the time. Her husband wore his hair short and shaved. And she said to me, she was like, hey, have you heard of this? And it was at one of her appointments. And this was probably, I think it would have been like 2017 at that point. And And I was like, no, like, this is crazy. What is this? And then at the time, it just so happened, I was kind of a little bit bored with what I'd been doing. I'd been doing lashes like for, you know, quite a few years at that point. So, so I ended up, I just basically found myself every night after work, I was like Googling and just kind of obsessed with the idea of SMP. I just thought it was so cool and so life-changing. And then at that point I made the decision to enroll in my first course. So that was kind of how I got introduced to it, was a client of mine who wanted her husband to look into it and had asked me my opinion on it. But at the time I'd never heard of it. It was still very, obviously, as you know, very, very new.
Yeah. Wow. And doing lashes, my sister does lashes. I mean, I think she's over there doing lashes right now, in her nice. Room. So tedious. It's so tedious. I mean, it takes,
well, it's the same. It's the same kind of tediousness and intricacy of SMP. And I think that's why I kind of knew, I was like, you know what, I'm going to be bad. It's hard to be bad at something, right? Especially something that's permanent. Whereas with lashes or makeup or anything else, it's like, you know, if you do kind of mess it up a little or it's not perfect, you can kind of remediate it. But so I was like, I think I can do this. I had kind of that instinct that I was like, I'm going to figure this out. I don't know how I'm going to do it, but I'm going to do it. I'm going to figure it out. So that was kind of my opinion on SMP was it was very similar to the work that I was doing with lashes.
You're like, well, if I do a couple blowouts, I could still fix this. It'd still be all right.
I mean, yeah, I guess, obviously at the time I'm like shaking.
It happens in the beginning. In the beginning, everybody does. Everybody.
Yeah. I was fortunate enough to be, because I was working full time. I was doing lashes full time. I was, you know, making enough of an income that I could supplement with a lot more training, than the initial, of course, you know, like the fundamental 3-day class. Like I was fortunate enough to be exposed to a lot more training opportunities that allowed me to be like fully, fully supervised for quite a while.
That's good, because that's rare. And I'm glad you recognize really rare, that yeah. You call that out and you understand that you were in a good position to be able to take more training. And obviously it's going to cost you more money too. I'm sure you paid I'm sure you've spent over 10 grand in training as a lot of
I mean,
us
I'm
have.
Always... Yeah, I honestly consider myself like forever a student. I'm just always kind of interested in different techniques and different, you know, kind of offshoots of SMP and like the removery removal and that kind of stuff. Like there's always going to be something that new that you can learn, and I'm forever willing to do that. I think it's really cool, and like it's nice to keep things fresh, and you know, you can get a little bored and a little stale and doing the same thing over and over again. So,
agreed. Was the hardest part being a female and working on men? I'm always curious about this because females, obviously, I'm a bald guy who just learned about SMP, and I see, hey, this girl's coming up to me, or I learn about scalp micropigmentation, and the first person I contact, she's female. I might be a little bit intimidated. Have you found any issues with that?
Yes, absolutely. Kind of, you know, first impression to that or first response to that question. Yes. Hard. Yes. However, I think I've learned over the years kind of how to read people and how to judge a situation, how to react, how to respond. I've moved into a new clinic as well since then. So I think everything looks a little bit more professional, a little bit more medical, more, you know, this is not like a hangout session. This is very, you know, this is a service. It's very professional. And that's kind of how I lead with my business. And I'm very proud of that, to be honest with you. I take no shit, cause no shit is my kind of way of life. So that's basically how I approach any, you know, weird situations when it comes to that the gender roles. So
so when they come in, you're very direct and obviously you're very knowledgeable and to be honest, your work is really good. I was stalking your page. Do everybody before they come on. I mean, your work is very, very good. Definitely top tier, definitely top tier. I trust you with my head. Thanks. If that makes sense.
Oh, perfect. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's nice of you to say. Thank you.
Because I always see that. I'm always like, even guys with hair, it's like, you know, because they don't have it, they don't own, like people come in, they can see it on my head. Right. Obviously we have all the pictures. It might be a little easier of a sell. So you're saying not so much anymore? You're not running into any issues with people during the consultation?
That's one thing that I never had the luxury of kind of telling people or having to show people is like, hey, you know, a lot of SMP artists are SMP clients or were SMP clients at one point, right? Like yourself. So you are your own walking advertisement. Of course, I don't have the luxury of that. And that's where I kind of had to position myself where I was like, I will let the work speak for itself. Obviously it's, you know, digital at that point. It's not on my head. I can't show people on myself. But I was serious. I'm very, very serious about producing good, very, very high quality, good work. And the clients that book with me are the ones that recognize that. And of course, you know, I've run into whatever other people say, you know, you only get bookings because for other reasons other than that I just do good work.
Because you're a pretty girl and the guy wants to hang out with the pretty girl.
Thank you.
Who cares? If they're coming in to see you, they're coming in to see you.
Yeah, no, you know what? Actually, I had an interesting, this was like a pivotal moment for me. I think this was about a year ago. I had this client come in and it was full, Norwood 6 or Norwood 7. So obviously I knew I was about to spend a lot of time with him. You know, he books in, he's all good. And so we're drawing his hairline. It's his first session. And he keeps looking up at me. And I'm like, brother, keep your chin straight. Like, look straight ahead. I'm going to draw your hairline. He keeps looking up. And he says, sorry, I just get nervous around beautiful women or whatever he said, something gross. And I stepped back and I was like, listen. And I said, this is my like go-to line now. I said, I'm going to ask you very politely, don't say or do anything in my clinic that you wouldn't say or do to a man.
Hey, I like that. You got to put your foot down.
Yeah. And from that moment on, I was like, that is my motto. Like that is how I do business. And that's kind of course. Yeah. There are situations like that where I kind of deal with it and I'm just a lot better at navigating that now. So
do you get, what about, in regards to females, do you do a lot of density fills on females?
Yeah. We do. I do quite a bit. I would say honestly, majority are our Norwood clients that we take care of. So I would say it's probably 80-20 Norwood and density female.
Okay.
It's increasing though. It's definitely a lot more females are calling and writing in for more information. At least it's becoming more of an option, I think, for females, where it's before it was, you know, SMP is very like it's for a bald, you know, shaved head. So, but yeah, it's definitely increasing.
And so, okay. Well, that's good to hear. Now, do you know how to cut the hair? Like if a person, do you know how to cut hair? I mean, obviously you could shave the head. Do you know how to do a fade or anything?
No. That's actually something I want to learn. I want to take like a barber 101 class or something, or do a trade or something with someone.
It's beneficial.
I think so. Yeah, I think so. I mean, in terms of like creating a fade, I don't think knowing how to cut a fade is, you know,
a deal breaker.
I can do a like a tattoo SMP fade, no problem. So I think it's to know how to do a fade with a clipper. Of course, yeah, maybe it'd be more interesting than anything, I think, but you definitely don't have to be a barber to know how to do a good SMP. That's for sure.
I agree. And the only reason I kind of bring that up is because what I found is, so when I was losing my hair, right, it starts getting thin all up here. And then if you keep
your SMP looks amazing, must I say, honestly. It looks mine? So good. Yeah.
Shout out John Giroux. So when my head was all thinning, if it was longer on the sides, it would look more thin on top. So what I did is I cut it real short, like a military style cut, and then kept it longer on top. So it made it look thicker and fuller.
It's all an illusion. I honestly say that kind of like, this is SMP is an illusion. I say that on the daily because it really is. It's like, you know, if the hair is even slightly above, with a Norwood client, like slightly above a zero trim, your SMP diminishes. And it's like, it's quite literally an illusion when you do trim it. And it, you know, everything's all matched up.
I agree. Yeah. What was the hardest part for you to learn during when you're doing your training? Was it the hairline?
Yeah. Hardest part. Yeah, I would say, I mean, no, you know what? I would say consistency, like pressure consistency. That's the hardest concept to kind of grasp. And once you have that, I think the rest becomes easy. So I heavily, when I teach students, I heavily emphasize consistency.
Yeah, I like the video that you posted that you were like, this is what I do during my first, and Kira, maybe you could pull this up during the video. She has a video on her Instagram. You do a wipe test during the first session so you can see. Because sometimes if you don't wipe, you're like, shit, only like 10 of those stuck, you know?
Yeah.
And then you can see once you do it, then you can see that it's all, hey, everything is on there.
Exactly. Yeah. And if I find too, like it's kind of just getting comfortable, right? Like we all try to cut corners when we're good at something, right? Or even when we're not, right? So I really try to stay disciplined with the wipe test that I do because it allows me to only work in kind of like 2-inch by 2-inch boxes at a time and make sure that's perfect. Then I move on to my next section. And that's kind of, I think where people run into trouble is they do the whole, like the whole crown or the whole front or whatever. And then they're like, shit, it's light here. Can I swear?
Yeah.
Say shit. Okay. So they're like, okay, it's, you know, darker here, lighter here. And then to go back and fix that is like, you'll go cross-eyed before you make it perfect. Right. It's just, you're staring at it for too long. It's very hard very difficult to make it perfect at that point.
Yeah, it's going to look patchy.
Yeah, right? Exactly. And it heals that way. And then when the second or third session comes around and it's patchy, again, it's so hard to bring everything to the same level and get it looking consistent. So that's why from jump, I'm very, very disciplined with my own clients and as well as with my own students. I'm kind of a drill sergeant in that regard. The consistency.
I think you should preach that. That's one of the most important things. I completely agree. Are you doing 3 sessions?
Yeah, 3 sessions, sometimes 4. Honestly, Norwood 7 clients, I tell people very often, it's not uncommon to need a 4th session.
I agree.
Yeah.
I do 4 too. It makes a better picture sometimes too.
Yeah, it's nice too if they come back for a 3rd and then you can grab a photo and then do, you know, if it's, I find the crown is really where we focus on the 4th session anyway. So if you can get a nice hairline, like healed hairline photo, that's obviously a bonus too.
Yeah, very true. Do you start on the back of the head or do you start on the hairline?
Kind of in between. I think I start like kind of right above the ears, like where like a headphone, actually like right where your headphone would sit. That's kind of where I start. I work my way forward. And then I finish up on the crown.
Let me ask you this. How come, because I know you blend, how come so many people seem to not blend very well? Have you ever noticed that? I notice with other artists, it's almost like they're blending, they're using like the same size needle that they would use. So say they're using like 25 up here, the 0.25 up here, and they'll use the 0.25 here. And now I know, people, I know you can make a smaller impression. But I'd rather just go to the smaller needle, you know, for me and blend all around here.
Yeah. Well, that's a good point. Honestly, like, to be honest, I don't change my needle size. I change my pressure.
Okay.
Yeah. So that's another point. It kind of lends to the fact that everybody does, we literally are artists at this point. Like you can't compare Picasso and Michelangelo.
Yeah.
Picasso, the artist. You can't compare the two. We're very different. And that's why clients choose, you know, who they're going to go see, because there's options now. It's not like how it used to be 5 years ago, where it was like one kind of artist covering one area. Right?
So I miss that.
Yeah, that's real.
Have you seen the competition growing where you're at?
Okay. I will. Yes. Yeah. I will say, like, some clients will kind of, you know, they'll bring in options, like screenshots of people's work. Right. And there's more often than not now, I'm seeing people's pages. I'm like, oh, I've never heard of this person. And I'm sure it's the same kind of where you are. There's like kind of like, you know, a handful of kind of the OGs that kind of control the area. And now there's more and more trickling in. And with that said, I don't know if this makes me sound bad, but I don't really pay a lot of attention to what other people are doing.
That's good. No, that doesn't sound bad. You should focus on yourself. I agree. Yeah. It can also just kind of can wear you down. And it's like, it doesn't matter, right? You want to grow your brand and your business regardless. So paying attention and trying to
keeping up with the Joneses kind of thing. And I look at everything online with such a lens where I'm like, anything could be fabricated at this point, right? So I don't know. I just I'm really leaning into kind of my individuality in terms of creativity and artistry, I guess, and really just hammering home how I want to do things. And I know that the clientele will come like based on that, and they'll book with me purely based on the fact that they prefer my style over
Agreed.
Kind of the other options out there. Yeah, I'm comfortable with that, and it's a nice place to be, I think.
I agree. I mean, I embarrass myself. I'm sure you've seen some of my videos. I look like a moron, and I'm just like, whatever. Hopefully they still come.
Yeah, no, it gives you, I mean, yeah, in terms of social posting, I'm terrible with that. But your page is great. Like, you can really tell kind of the type of service and experience that you're going to have just based on that kind of personality that you put out there. So it's good. It's great.
I like the video where I had a question about this. It looked like you were on a yacht doing SMP. Now, were you doing the real procedure? Was that just for the video?
That was real, believe it or not. A friend of mine, it's his boat, and he's like, hey, my friend needs to come see you. He needs to come see you. He's like, why don't we do a boat day? And at the time, I'm like, I can't do that. We're going to be moving. I'm going to like really mess up this guy's head. And then we were parked at that point. We took the boat afterwards. We took it out afterwards. But yeah, that was real. That was a real first session. And at that point, I was like, okay, let me go all the way here. Get the photographer, bring the friends over. They had some drinks. I joined them after. It was fun.
So you did the whole first session. And the good thing is, if you're doing the first session, the second session, if you did make any mistakes, you could clean it up anyway, right?
Yeah. You know what it was? It was hot. It was hot on the boat, and we couldn't really get the shot on the covered area of the boat. So he was sweating at that point. I'm like, okay, this is all going to be like so light. But of course, that'd be better to be light than too dark. So.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah. Agreed.
Yeah. It was fun.
So do you, I saw quite a few of your videos. Do you like doing the marketing aspect? Cause a lot of people, some people hate it. Some, you know, how do you feel?
I don't hate it as much as I'm terrible at it.
No, you're not terrible at it.
I go through spurts. It's very inconsistent for me, which is definitely a goal of mine. This kind of the second half of this year, and that was the goal of my first half of this year as well. But yeah, just being more consistent posting, it makes a huge difference, and it really does kind of attract more eyeballs to your page. So yeah, it's something that I'm way better at the art than I am the marketing, which is, I have a business degree, so I should really use it, but we'll get there.
It's, I mean, your work, obviously, I would say speaks for itself. It's really good work. The SMP is very good. Anybody listening to this, I highly recommend Katie. But I mean, when we're in business, I feel like I get exhausted, you know, feeling the obligation that, hey, I need to post today, or I definitely got to do a before and after picture. And I have a whole shit ton I've never put. I just don't feel like it sometimes. You know what I mean?
Oh my God. My camera roll is filled with stuff I haven't posted.
Why do you have so many bald guys in your phone?
Oh yeah, that's definitely my phone is constantly full. I always buy new iCloud storage. Like, I gotta go through it, and once I post it, I can get rid of it, right? But it's full of that for sure.
Yeah, well, hey, and my advice, and to anybody listening to this, you know, for the marketing, because some people are afraid to be on camera. Some people just don't like the sound of their own voice or the way they look, whatever the case might be. Hey, just who gives a fuck, to be honest? I mean, it's like, look, take it or leave it. This is me. You know, I'm a real human. I'm authentic. I want to help you. I can help you. You can see my work's good. You know, this is me being weird, or this is me being creative. And I think a lot of it resonates with people when they see that's a, you know, that's an authentic human being just, you know, trying to make, build their brand.
Yeah, exactly. You know what? I've been on both sides of it. I used to hate the idea of even filming anything, talking into the camera, like here, even a voiceover, I've been on both sides of it now. And I think I'm finally turning a corner where I'm like, you know what, it's this whatever. And people get a laugh out of it. And you're more relatable when you are like quirky and awkward and weird and you make mistakes, or, you know, even like showing up. And there's been days where I'm like, oh, like I literally have my hair in just a bun and I full sweats. I look like homeless at this point. And I'm like, I can't shoot a video, but that is real life like that. And I'm really realizing that, which is, it's interesting. It's just way more real and genuine. And, you know, it's just real, I guess. That's all
I agree. About it. Yeah.
It's more relatable. Yeah.
How do you feel about the future of SMP? Not just your territory, but like, do you think it's going to keep growing? How do you think? Do you think it's getting oversaturated? How do you think about the trainings?
Yeah, that's a good question. I've gone back and forth on this, to be honest with you. I wholeheartedly believe in, and this might be a very obvious statement, but I wholeheartedly believe in the good work that SMP is, the good work of SMP, I should say. And I go through this kind of teeter-totter in my mind where the bad work, because of the lack of regulation, there's obviously so much bad work, as we all know. The bad work will make the good work look amazing. But at the same time, on the kind of flip side, is that the bad work still kind of casts this cloud, this dark cloud over the industry where there's fear and like this kind of assumption that it's all going to look like that, or it all looks like that. And so I don't know. I believe in the future of very natural, subtle, realistic SMP, I should say. That's kind of my answer to that question. Trainings. You know what? I am a trainer. I have taken a fundamentals course. I've taken master classes. I offer the two as well. I'm very realistic with my students, where I say, you know, if you don't put your own work in, this class is not going to make you an artist.
Like, you're going to make $100,000 if you just take this class.
Yeah. Easy. Right. Yeah. I'm very transparent with my students. I'm like, I will give you the tools, but that's what I'll give you. I'm not giving you, and I can't give you anything else. It's in, you know, the power is in the students' hands to really kind of make a name for themselves and do it for themselves and put the work in to create that $100,000 salary or whatever it is. Right. So it's very individual at that point.
So that's good. So you're very honest and transparent with the people that you're teaching, because there's definitely, I think there's definitely people who sell it a little harder than that, to make it seem, you know, that it's easily going to turn into a lot of money. Yeah. You know, you take a training and then people, you know, bald people are going to be flooding to you. And now it can, that can happen if you're already maybe established in something else. Maybe you're a really well-known barber or stylist or PMU art or something. Yeah. Maybe you might move up faster than the average person. But for most people, you're also building your brand and a business. It's a never ending grind, right?
Yeah. Literally never ending, especially with kind of how the economy is right now. Like SMP, I think, is still, and it always has been, almost in this like infancy stage. And I think it's just basically taken some hits, just again, like obviously a global pandemic that'll do some damage to an industry. And even like I notice here in Canada, I don't know if you guys, I don't really know anything really about the financial kind of situation with the States, but the Bank of Canada will announce interest rate announcements, basically is what they make. And if it was like a steady climb for so many announcements, and I literally found any time there was an announcement happening and I had bookings, they would cancel. So it's like, you know, you're like climbing up this, like getting out of the infancy stage of the industry is getting out of this infancy stage, but then it's like, boom, right back down. Like, so I don't know. I think it's still an amazing opportunity for students. It is obviously, it's growing. Yeah, definitely. But it's kind of growing in like a plateau kind of way, because there's still so much bad work out there. Like, just unbelievable.
Yeah, no, you're right. And I can go on a whole freaking rant about this, but I'm not going to. Yeah. But the federal, I'm a crypto holder. So I've been in crypto since 2017. Okay. Right. Nice. And so the Federal Reserve, so here in the US, very similar, I guess, to Canada, the interest rates have been climbing, right? And so this year, in the beginning of 2024, they said, Powell said, we're going to cut the interest rates three times this year. And so for people who don't know this, when the Fed cuts the interest rates, that means they'll cut the mortgage rates, the credit card rates, the banks will lower all these things. But then they just announced like 2 days ago on Wednesday, they said, hey, remember when we said three? We're actually only going to do it one time. And we don't actually know when we're going to do it. So that's when Bitcoin went, it went back down. And so now we're hovering. Yeah, to answer your question, the U.S. economy is not doing so well.
A little rocky. We're kind of, I feel like we're kind of one in the same in that sense. Like Canada always kind of follows the States a little bit. But it's a rough, definitely. But I think in terms of the S&P industry specifically, I think it absolutely will grow. It's just it's taken a couple of hits. Along with other industries, of course, right? Just kind of where we're at, you know, financially.
Yeah, and you're already
as a country,
and as it grows, you're already established. You're already really good. I mean, I think you should be fine. I think that about most, you know, what you were saying, the OGs in all the different cities and towns throughout the world. I think if as long as you're consistent and you don't think, hey, I'm a Mr. Know-it-all. Because there are people like that. And you're like, hey, I'm going to continue to learn new techniques, new skills. Like, I mean, you know, if you know Tony Abogato, you know, he's now doing the little strokes on the front.
Combined,
you know, that's a newer technique. Not everybody's doing it. Most people aren't doing that. And it looks good. Right. I mean, it's going to look better on certain skin tones, obviously. But it does. Yeah. I think it looks really good.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's things like that where I think as long as the technology and the innovation keeps on an upward trend, then the industry itself is going to grow. It already has so much. Like I've seen, you know, new products, new pigments, new techniques, even since I've started. And I'm not one of the OGs. So I think it'll definitely keep growing for sure.
What brands are you using?
Like pigment and needles and all that?
Yep.
I use Ghost pigment religiously.
Okay.
And FYT. I use right now, I'm using the hard lines. They're amazing.
Yeah.
Have you tried them?
Yeah, the Taylor Perry ones.
No, FYT.
Yeah, the FYT. He has a needle, the hard line ones. Aren't those his? The black box?
I don't know. I should know that.
Stay right here. Talking about these ones?
Okay, mine are, exactly like that, but they're pink.
Oh, okay.
They're probably the same. Let's just be real; they're the same needles. Yeah, they're amazing.
Yeah, they are great, and they're usually the point one fives, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I love those. I love using those on hairline, especially with the very fair skinned people, redheads. You know, people really fair skinned. Have you ever used the 0.33 on someone real dark? That it seems to work a little bit better because sometimes I'll do an impression and it doesn't show up very well. Whereas the opposite, I have to use the smallest needle on the, you know, someone redhead freckles, someone like that.
I'm definitely a big believer in kind of using a range of needles based on them. I have my favorites. Like I do kind of hover. I 0.25 is 0.6 RL, right?
0.2. That's
0.8. Okay. Yeah. I use the new scale, new sizing, but so I hover between 0.2 and 0.25. Those are obviously my favorites, but I go down as needed, go up as needed.
That's what I pretty much use as well, and I'll always go smaller on the hairline. I usually use a smaller needle on the hairline depending on it. How let me ask you this, because Masood is so good at scar camouflage.
Yeah.
Did you train with him with the scars, or did you have to figure that out on your own?
We train with him for everything, but his eye for a scar is like, you can't teach that. That's incredible. You can't, like, I'm like he's like, oh, you just do this, it's easy. I'm like, huh? But no, I mean, obviously, I don't love doing scars, I will say. So I kind of pass them off, and I'm okay if they don't end up booking. But I just love a Norwood client. It's my favorite.
Me too. And they pay more.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's less, I'm like, my back is broken when I do a scar. I need to like get a better kind of seat position or bed or chair or whatever it is. Cause I'm like, I think that's part of the reason why I hate doing them. So I'm like, oh, I'm going to be in pain after.
Oh, I agree. I hate when I have to do a whole head. when I have to recreate the neckline and behind the ear, it's terrible.
Yeah, you gotta get in there. Yeah.
And some people's skin, not everyone's skin's the same, people.
Oh, of course. Yeah, God, no. Yeah.
Katie, so if someone's interested in SMP, how can they find you?
Yeah. You can find me. I have my username here at kt.smp.
Fantastic. Thanks for coming on, Katie. We'll have to do this again.
Yeah, thanks
for
having me. This is fun.